This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. For many of you, it's your favorite Intelligent Medicine segment of the week because you never know what you're going to hear about. And usually, if we answer a series of questions, chances are something may be relevant to the concerns of you or your family. So settle back with us for 40 minutes or so, as we answer questions sent to us via email. radioprogram@AOL.com is how you get questions to us. And Layla Mutin with me today is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. Welcome, Layla. How are you doing?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thanks. So in the news this week was a very interesting article. I don't know if you had a chance, because you were on jury duty this week,
yes,
right?
Yes, I was.
You were doing your public service.
Yes, I did.
Was it like a murder trial? Was
no.
it like guys in like orange jumpsuits chained to the chairs? Or you know?
Not? It was civil court, not criminal court, and it was a short case, and we came to our verdict unanimously, and I'm very happy with the result, and it's nice to be back.
Okay. So was justice served, or
yes,
was there
absolutely.
It was a miscarriage of justice?
No, justice was served, and that feels very gratifying because this was the system at work.
Good.
Very law and order.
Your confidence in the system was bolstered, right?
Yes.
Bum, bum, bum,
da, 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 da.
Right. Okay, law and order.
Yeah.
All right, so coming back to nutritional subjects, this week, and because you were sequestered in the jury, you weren't allowed any media. You were
nope.
sitting in a room, and you could have, right?
Yeah, no. And you know what's funny? They told us, don't Google my name, don't Google the judge's name,
right.
don't Google the place where
okay.
this occurred. That was funny.
Okay, so you probably didn't see this story. Big
uh-huh.
story, and it was about the show The Biggest Loser. Do you ever see the show The Biggest
yes.
Loser?
Yes, yep.
But you saw, did you see the story
I
about
saw
that?
The article, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so very interesting story, and the gist of the story is that you see these people with these making spectacular strides on The Biggest
yeah.
Loser, and they lose like hundreds of pounds, and they turn their lives around, and they get a lot of encouragement, and they,
yeah.
you know, they win prize money, and blah 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 blah. And now they revisit these people a few years later, and what they find is the vast majority of them have regained, if not all of the weight, much of the weight, and in some cases they've surpassed their previous
yeah.
weight. And they describe the situation for a lot of these people. They are, some of them, really following a very rigorous program. They're trying to exercise. It's very hard to sustain that level of, like, drill sergeant, you know, boot camp exercise
right.
permanently,
mm.
you know, without injuries or exhaustion or boredom. And the diet, they're like on 800 calories a day. They cannot prevent weight from coming back. So you as a nutritionist, what's your take on that? Because we do not conduct Biggest Loser weight
yeah.
loss programs at the Hoffman Center. And people get a little bored. They say, oh, you know, I only lost like 4 pounds this month. You know,
mm-hmm.
Can we move it a little faster? And sometimes we lose people because they watch TV and they say,
right.
I'm going to go for like one of these lose 40 pounds in 40 days programs.
Yes. Another very low calorie diet,
right.
which is not sustainable. I read that article. I
right.
read it pretty thoroughly. And what I found out is, yes, they're told to eat so many calories a day, and this is still dinosaur nutrition.
Right.
Because a calorie is not a calorie. What I found out further is that they're relying too heavily on exercise. 80% of weight loss people, and this is not a secret, 80% of your weight loss is determined by what you're eating, how you're eating.
Right.
20% of that is taken care of by exercise, unless you're an elite athlete. That's
right.
a different situation.
And don't forget
I'm talking
about... And don't forget about exercise, because
yeah.
all the benefits of exercise, your cardiovascular system, to your brain, to your joints.
You're priming your metabolism.
It's rejuvenating.
It's a good thing. Yes.
But for weight loss, per se,
no.
not so great.
Not so great. Exercise alone doesn't
okay.
do it. What I found further reading the article, besides the amount of calories which are too low, because when calories are too low, Mother Nature is going to shift your metabolism downward, number one. So your metabolic rate is going to lower. And that's why they're not burning as many calories anymore.
Right.
But the real crime here is that they're still eating a diet of egg whites and whole grain toast.
Yes.
Low in fat.
Mm-hmm. Salad without the dressing, you know, salad with a little lemon juice or something like
that.
Right, yeah.
It's still higher in carbohydrates, not enough fat to promote satiety, really not enough protein to promote satiety. And as we know, they're burning less calories now, not because they're eating less calories, but they're not eating the right amounts of, they're not eating the proper calories. They're not eating calories from protein and fat. Too many carbohydrates, not enough in fat. And that's not going to trigger a fired up furnace of metabolism to happen, because we know that when you're eating fat and protein calories, they require more energy from the body to metabolize. They're on the wrong diet.
Yep.
They should not be counting calories. Yep. And they don't need to exercise. Some people are exercising 3 or 4 hours a day. Who has time to do that?
Right.
And it's ridiculous.
And they might even be building
up
high levels of cortisol, which actually is a stressor that prevents you from losing weight.
Yeah.
Look, nature has provided a mechanism to prevent us from wasting away. And in a mistaken effort to help us to conserve fat, you go into a real conservation mode.
Yeah.
And you slow down. You even can become hypothyroid as a result.
That happens from a lot of yo-yo dieting or not enough calories.
And with their changes in leptin, which increase appetite, which
ghrelin increases the appetite, leptin kills it, and here is the catch 22 that
these
they get at.
These people are deficient in leptin.
They're deficient in leptin, but leptin is secreted by the fat cells. So the more fat we're burning off our bodies, the less leptin we're going to secrete.
Yeah,
that makes sense with nature because if we're getting too thin, it's going to up our. We don't need all that much leptin. Therefore. But they're still eating the wrong diet to maintain any of their weight loss. So despite all that exercise, if they're going to still eat a high-carb, low-fat diet, they're still keeping themselves in fat storage mode. Then you better go stay an extra hour at the gym. But that's only going to serve to make you hungrier now.
Right. Today you saw an overweight type 2 diabetic woman. And in the past, she's done crash dieting. She's done yo-yo dieting.
Mm-hmm.
The net result of it is that she gained all the weight back, and now she's frankly diabetic at the age of what? She's like young. She's 46 or 47.
Mm-hmm.
What was your approach to her? Obviously not the Biggest Loser approach.
Right, right. She is on the anti-diabetes diet, which is a very low-carb diet. Type 2 diabetes is defined as a condition of carbohydrate intolerance. You can't be on a moderate or let alone a high-carb diet anymore. And we look at that looking at insulin levels, not just fasting blood sugar, but the GTT, the hemoglobin A1C, maybe a C-peptide, fructosamine even, although fructosamine not so much. C-peptide is probably a better marker. Her biggest improvement, she reported to me today, was that I'm not hungry anymore.
Yes.
So this diet is okay. I quoted her in my note. It's easy to eat like this.
Good, okay.
Because if you really
and
let the diet...
And that's the way we want it to be, because if it's a terrible sense of deprivation, you need a game show and 20 million people rooting for you weekly.
Yeah.
That amount of motivation can sustain you. But if you're on your own and you got to do it for months and months and years, and the crowd disappears, the show's over, goodbye, go home, you're on your own.
That's it. And you know what? You need a cheering squad if you're going to try to lose weight on a low-fat, high-carb diet.
Right.
It's going to become harder and harder as you go along, and the older you get.
Plus,
things change.
Plus prizes, plus whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you want to get rid of the hunger and even that feeling of deprivation, if you eat in the right fashion, all of that is going to fall away.
You know, what's interesting is we do this podcast on a weekly basis, but I'm doing a lot of podcasts with experts in the field of nutrition, and they're all lining up behind this concept. The top most astute nutritionists in the world are coming around to this notion that we took a big wrong turn with our diet recommendations in the past, and that fat is actually the thing that turns you into a fat-burning machine.
Exactly.
And that actually is the way that you can achieve more permanent weight optimization. And not everybody can get to the precisely the weight they want to be. You can't just pick a weight off the shelf and say, I want to be that weight. But you can be all that you can be with the best possible diet and a little bit of exercise.
That's right. That's right. And a lot of people still can't wrap their minds around, but that's fatty. If I eat that, I'll get fat. Nutrition is not as simple as plumbing.
Right.
The fat you eat does not turn to fat in your body.
And there are microbiome effects. And, you know, and I haven't changed my caloric intake either when I went on a paleo diet. But I inadvertently lost 6 or 8 pounds. I step on the scale now. I'm 161. I used to be 168 or so.
Mother Nature takes care of all of that when we're eating in the right way. It just...
Good.
And do you feel deprived? I mean, did you feel on a paleo diet? Did you feel...
I re-upped for it. I did it 30 days, and now I want to redo it because I'm, you know, as the old song goes, I'm hooked on the feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a very old song. All right. So let's tackle some questions. What's going on the question front?
Okay. We've got an email from Forrest, along with a link to some information here. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, can you give an opinion on the accuracy of some of these probiotic claims that he's read on the internet? Warning, you will be shocked to learn the real truth about most probiotic brands. And our probiotic can re-inoculate your gut in as little as 48 hours, but other probiotics make that claim but can't really do it, and so forth and so on.
Right.
Let's talk about how probiotics actually work.
Sure.
They re-inoculate our gut, yes. Many probiotics, or many brands, they work as long as you take them. So that's why it's important to continue taking them, not just after you've taken a round of antibiotics, not just after you've become ill or something like that, or you're trying to counteract a little IBS or something like that. It's, you are encouraged to continue taking probiotics.
Right.
You don't necessarily have to switch them around either. It depends how comprehensive the probiotic is. Like a Dr. O'Hara's is quite...
12 different species.
Yeah, 12 different and prebiotics.
So here's my take on it, is that there are probably some probiotics that are poorly made that don't have viable organisms or in a delivery system that makes them less bioavailable, or maybe the species that they use are not the best species. But, you know, it's very unpredictable. It's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
And we know now by analysis of the microbiome of different people that there's tremendous variations in the microbiome. So that one man's meat may be another man's poison when it comes to probiotics, or vice versa. So the other issue that we're striving for is what's called microbial diversity. So we introduce new, more bacteria in the intestine. That's what we want. That is associated with health in some way. We don't know. There's not usually one magic probiotic that cures a disease. It's more about the blend, you know, the constellation, the community of bacteria in your intestine. And so one of the problems with probiotics is that it is probably not the best way to change your microbiome. Some people think, well, if you just introduce this, it'll grow like wildfire and it'll take over and it'll be the good bacteria will supplant the bad bacteria.
That's the hope. But...
That's the hope. But the bad bacteria have the ability to push back against the introduction of good bacteria. And so sometimes they are resistant. So we actually see people who we do tests on, and we find they have no lactobacillus whatsoever. What?
Yes.
I'm taking a probiotic, but they have no lactobacillus whatsoever.
Wow.
Because they have a hostile environment in their gastrointestinal tract that does not permit it to grow. So what are other ways to change the microbiome? Well, one way is to drastically change your diet. Go on more of a paleo diet. I think that may be one of the advantages, is that you transform...
You prebiotic foods as well.
Among which are things like Jerusalem artichoke and high-fiber foods.
Yeah, asparagus, leeks, garlic.
Which encourage the production of compounds that the bacteria feed on, like butyrate and so on and so on. It's difficult. It's not rocket science yet. These claims, by the way, are, I reject them. They're utterly spurious. They're just a way to gain some, in a market that's crowded with alternatives, it's a way to gain a market niche by suggesting that the other probiotics suck and ours are better. And I think that there are, you know, some brands are more reliable, higher quality. But I noticed that for some people, I try one, it doesn't work, or it gets an adverse effect, and then I try another, and then finally, I may arrive on one that's made a difference.
Right, right.
So, for example, a patient today who has had C. difficile in the past is a patient who does not do well with ordinary probiotics. He does well with Saccharomyces boulardii, which is actually helpful against C. difficile, according to studies. Now, he says his digestion is much better with that when he takes it.
Terrific.
So, unfortunately, it is a little bit like a trial and error. We don't have, I wish we had a test that we could give people like a poop test, said, oh, you need this or that or the other probiotic.
Yeah.
It's not there yet. We don't have that yet.
Yeah.
And, other things that affect the viability, is it stomach acid? Does it destroy it? Well, probably not. Probably not because, because things get past the gastrointestinal, barriers into the lower intestine, and if you eat fermented food, it doesn't mean that if you have normal stomach acidity, it destroys the bacteria that are in sauerkraut or kimchi or yogurt.
That's true.
There's so many considerations.
That's true. Forrest, thank you for your question, and your probiotic should probably be as unique as you are. Okay. Let's see. We've got an email from Jean. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, a number of years ago, Ralph Snodsmith from the Old Garden Show on WOR...
Can I just interject here? Ralph Snodsmith is an old radio colleague of mine. He's deceased. But he was a guy who did the Garden Hotline on WOR, which was a call-in show about plants and about gardens. And he was brilliant. People think I'm like good on answering questions about, medical conditions. This guy could diagnose your plant problem and admit, like, I have like whatever, sagging orchids. And he would through a series of questions and like work through a little diagnostic and come up with exactly the reason that the orchids were sagging. What's interesting about him, he had a very long career at WOR, and he once told me of a situation where he got sued. He got sued for giving lawn advice. He gave somebody lawn advice, and it didn't work out, and they sued the radio station. It was like garden malpractice. They had to hire a lawyer, and they actually went through a whole thing. Of course, they won the case. They dismissed the case. It was frivolous. But can you imagine?
How ridiculous.
So I got to be careful.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Anyway,
so Jean writes, a number of years ago, Ralph Snodsmith from the Old Garden Show on WOR mentioned that taking thiamine supplements, which is vitamin B1, helps repel mosquitoes. Have you heard of this? Does it work? Are there any other natural repellents that work?
As good a gardener as he was, I don't think he was such a good entomologist, which is a scientist studying insects, because thiamine has proven even through scientific experimentation, it's proven not very effective at repelling mosquitoes.
Really?
It supposedly causes you to exude some sort of smell that the mosquitoes don't like. But I'm a test case for that. I've taken niacin and gone into mosquito country, and they just
thiamine,
which is vitamin B1.
Because I was going to try that this summer, so it's not...
I don't think it's efficacious. Okay. I mean, you could look, for some unique people with some types of skin characteristics or odor characteristics,
maybe,
in my work. But there's something peculiar about the blood type, perhaps, of certain people, or some factor that causes some people to be much more attractive to mosquitoes. I have that factor.
AB positive?
Probably, you're the opposite of me. I'm O.
Ah.
So, are you very attracted to mosquitoes?
Yeah.
Well, then it's not about blood type, because we're the opposite blood types.
Yeah.
There's some other aspect of our metabolism that makes it more likely that mosquitoes will bomb us.
Well, I'll be using a lot of Cedarside this summer.
Cedarside, yes.
Yeah.
Good product from last year. Hope they come back with us this year.
Other things, I don't know of any other natural mosquito repellent. I think we've tried lots of garlic or something, but I'm not sure that actually works.
Internally or externally?
Internally.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
I eat a lot of garlic anyway, so I don't know how much more I was eating in the summer.
Maybe the mosquitoes dig it.
Maybe. Oh, my. Okay, I have to consider that.
Yeah, maybe they're Italian mosquitoes.
Oh, my. Which might explain why they also bite my brother-in-law just as much. He's Italian.
Oh,
so
there
maybe
you go.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's it. Gene, we hope you have a mosquito bite-free summer as well. Wow. Okay.
Well, this, you know, I have to say there are some real concerns this summer with the Zika virus.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the word isn't out yet on whether the Zika virus is going to become endemic to New York.
Yeah.
With climate change and the spread of mosquito vectors, it's possible this won't just be a problem confined to the southern United States and the Caribbean. And from what I can see, the demarcation line is somewhere south of Massachusetts and north of New York, like sort of middle New England.
Hmm.
And there's a possibility that Zika virus may be transmissible. It's a big deal because...
Guillain-Barre could be one of
the... Guillain-Barre, but also these horrible birth defects. Like, can you imagine the apprehension of a woman who is contemplating pregnancy and will be pregnant in the summer and maybe, you know, spending some time on the patio, going outside in the woods, you know, and so on. How many people inadvertently get mosquito bites, and you never know.
That's true.
You know, and it could be absolutely devastating to the baby. This is not just a cooked up scare story. This is a real deal. And they now have, you know, first it was thought, well, it's circumstantial evidence. It was thought that the mosquito spraying was the cause of the birth defects.
Hmm.
But that turned out not to be the case, that it wasn't the pesticide. We now have a concern about pesticides too, because they're going to be spraying like crazy here. I mean, there've been times, you know, when they had West Nile in New York, I used to do a radio show at night,
mm-hmm.
and they would do nightly spraying on Fifth Avenue in New York, and these big trucks would come down the street when I was leaving the radio station at like 11:30 at night,
mm-hmm.
and they would spray, you know, like the whole, you know, the sidewalks and the streets with this toxic plume of chemicals. And I'm thinking, what are they doing here?
Wow.
You know? They now have some evidence that suggests that these chemicals may contribute to the epidemic of autism. So on the one hand, you have a choice between getting sprayed by the chemicals and having a child with autism, or getting bitten by a mosquito and having a child with microcephaly, you know, which is devastating in terms of intellectual development. It's a Hobbesian choice.
Yeah, we're going to have to walk around with individual mosquito nets.
That could be the answer.
That might be...
I'm
that
thinking
could be the next fashion trend or something.
Right. Abercrombie and Fitch will do a fashionable mosquito net, you know. We could do that, right?
Oh, my. Oh, my goodness. Okay. We've got another email here, no name. Does the cellulose in supplement capsules also wreak havoc on the gut? Short answer, no. No.
It
cellulose.
Yeah,
microcrystalline cellulose, that kind of... cellulose isn't... It's plant fiber.
Plant fiber.
It's plant fiber.
It's wood.
That's basically it.
Sawdust.
Yeah.
But actually, they're not putting sawdust in your supplements. I mean, maybe some...
Unless you're buying some...
Really
horrible,
strange brand.
Exactly.
But microcrystalline cellulose is a capsulating ingredient that actually helps with the flow.
It's like a flow agent.
Right.
Just like magnesium stearate is also a flow agent. We also know nothing's wrong with magnesium stearate.
It's innocent.
Yeah, it's innocent. Yeah.
All right, short answer, you know, I think that's an important question.
Right.
All right, let us pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. And let's look forward to the question we're going to answer in part two. What can we look forward to?
Okay, everything I read says that Rumashield, or UC2, is superior to glucosamine. What say you, Dr. Hoffman?
Okay, we will tackle that question in a moment when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, our weekly Q&A with Layla.